Today's episode is brought to you by Bululu Studios. Bululu Studios is a small event space located in Savannah, Georgia. It is the perfect location for MFA thesis shows. For more information, please visit bululustudios.com. That is BULULUstudios.com.
Hi, hello, this is Kevin. Thank you for listening to The Strand. Last week, I was able to spend some time with a few working artists in Miami, Florida. I have titled this four-part series, The Miami Minutes, and it contains conversations with Juan Enriquez, Roxana Barba, Carrie Phillips, and Yi Chin Hsi. Today's episode is a conversation that I had with Roxana Barba, a Peruvian artist whose research-driven practice incorporates interdisciplinary uses of performance, video, and installation. Learn more about her work at roxanabarba.com. Stay up to date with my own work by following me on Instagram at kevinwillpaint. Thank you for taking some time to speak with me. We're at your studio at the Laundromat in Miami, Florida. And thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
Yes, my website is like my name, Roxana with one N and an X, Barba, B-A-R-B-A. So roxanabarba.com. And on Instagram, I am at AU_Roxana.
Beautiful. All right. So can you tell me, I think you're from South America, I think Peru, right?
Yes.
What part of Peru, and maybe tell me a little bit about your experiences there and maybe how you got to Miami, something like that.
Sure. I was born and raised in Lima, in the capital city. Sorry. My mother is from the Andes, from Cusco. My father is from the northern part of Peru. But so I grew up there and moved to the States at the age of 18, and I did college here.
Where at? In Miami or no?
Yes, oh, New cool. World School of the Arts.
Oh, wow. My wife went there for her BFA.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe I know her.
Maybe. It was like in 2010 or so, something like that.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a beautiful, it was a great school, great education. And she also met people like Fred Snitzer was
right.
A pretty special person mm-hmm. involved in her life. But yeah, it was
I was there way before that, but.
Okay, right on.
So then after I graduated from New World, I moved to Mexico and I spent 5 years in Mexico City. At that time, I was teaching and working and touring, doing dance performance. And then when I came back to Miami, well, actually, my son was born in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, when we were back in Miami, with time, my practice, well, I took a pause first, a long pause from creating work because I had to, become the family provider.
Yeah.
But I managed to place myself in arts admin. So I learned a lot doing that, and that has actually opened me many doors. So I'm, grateful for that pause as well. And then gradually my work is now mixing video installation, collage, together with dance performance. So, yeah. So I guess the question was where I was born and how I found
Lima.
Myself here.
Yeah. part of my studies at University of Miami was to travel to Peru, and we went to PSAC.
Ah.
Do you know PSAC?
Yes. It's in Cusco. Uh-huh.
North of it, yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh.
It's like 1,200 people, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Coya, actually. PSAC was the bigger city, and Coya was the suburbs. Not at all suburbs. I think Coya had like 1,200 people, but I always enjoyed my time in Peru. I enjoyed the people there. the food and just the energy. Like, it's got its own soul, you know? And I've always had this love for that country. But you made it to the States. You were sitting in laundromat. And I think you have work up in New York.
Right now, yes. It's part of a group with the Latinx Project at NYU. Uh-huh. It's created by Daniel Arturo Almeida, a Miami-based Venezuelan visual artist who also is an incredible curator. And I'm so happy to be part of the show because they're incredible artists. And the subject matter is... has been in my mind for the last few years, so I'm very happy to be part of that and the conversations that are taking place around it.
Nice. What's the subject matter and why is it so special to you?
So essentially I started reconnecting very strongly back with history in Peru a few years ago. 2019 I received an award from the Nine Arts from the Knight Foundation.
Yeah.
And it was essentially to create a multimedia performance based on pre-Columbian iconography. But I was proposing a 2-year research process ahead of that. So that led me to read many books and do many Zooms with people who were in Peru and artists, historians, archaeologists, and, I was collecting all this information and all these incredible connections were happening in my mind. I was just learning the history and connecting it to the present. This was already now, we're like in the pandemic time. So yeah. Learning about ancestral cosmology, like for example, in which time is not linear, like in Western time, and there is life after death. All of that for me became this like this imaginary during the pandemic that opened this other sense of time, where time was now like a bit more elastic,
okay,
and almost cyclical, like they explained in cosmology. So I've been drawing from specific points in time in history or events that have drawn my attention, and I've wanted to be critical, but at the same time I've been wanting to connect to this type of cosmology to bring some sort of healing around this stuff.
What does the exhibit look like? Like, can you walk us through
just the exhibit in New York?
Yeah, just to tie it into that and see what is it? Can you describe that experience?
Sure. So,
or visually too.
Yeah. So
does it include dance or?
My piece includes dance and movement.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
It's a video installation.
Is it projected?
On plexiglass. Okay. It's on the floor and it's mapped on two pieces that are shaped in the form of chacanas, mm-hmm. which are this like sort of stair-shaped forms. And together, both of them behind you, you'll see two plexiglasses. So it's in those two shapes, but they're on the floor. So the projection is mapped on the floor because the ideas have to do with excavation. And I wanted to have this feeling at one point that people were sort of about to dig or were experiencing or were witnessing, diggers looking for something. So Daniel, the curator, had seen or had visited the studio actually here at Laundromat, and I had shared some of the research and some of the performance images of the work when I presented it in Peru, and he was very interested in learning about certain things, and we stayed in touch, and then he told me about the show. He asked me to propose a video installation, so then the work started to take shape. And when I started thinking about it, you know, and he was telling me a little bit about other artists who were in the part of the show, And he was telling me that, you know, about all of these connections, there was this other artist who also works with the body in very interesting ways with the female body. And we started having conversations. So then I thought, well, you know, I don't want to take the easy route and let's say, like, I don't want to re-edit videos of the performance and try to just collage them in. I just want to continue digging into the ideas of the performance. And I ended up with this interest in illicit traffic of pre-Columbian pieces. So I picked up a couple of books to learn about that. And it's a very complex subject. It's painful to read about. And so why essentially
it's painful because it
still very much exists. And it's pieces that were once sacred, that like from thousands and thousands of years ago, that were possibly used for ceremonies, that were incredibly meaningful and valuable, but in a mythical, spiritual sense, you know, from the understanding that we have, you know, now looking back into history. But they are they're extracted, they are digged by huaqueros who are, so there's a huaca, which huaca has a few meanings, but I don't want to make it confusing, but a huaca also means like a sacred, it can be a site where rituals were practiced. Mm-hmm. So huaqueros are the people who will dig looking for profitable objects that they can resell. The problem with that is that unlike archaeologists who will do a very extensive, careful, methodical excavation, they're just going there looking for certain items that they know are valuable, like certain textiles or certain pieces that they know they can get a lot of money for.
Right.
And then they just destroy the rest. So that's on one end. They're mining for goods. And yeah, they're the enemy of the archaeologists. Sure. But at the same time, they become collaborators in a strange way. Mm. Or history has put them in instances where, you know, they have to collaborate. And then on the other hand, there are some huaqueros who have the belief that this is part of their own legacy. And if they ask for permission with certain rituals, and the huacas respond authorizing they listen to the response and they do it properly, they can do it because it's part of their legacy. And the reality is that there's incredible need and there's a market for it. There's incredible demand, and sometimes, you know, that maybe it's the one thing that will help the family survive. So it's a complex issue.
Yeah.
And this piece tries to, in one part of the video where the shot is from my neck to my belly, let's say, I'm using, is it called a gravel? So I'm using that and I'm doing this hand gestures while there's text that is there. And it has to do with, you know, like how these pieces have been decontextualized, but we see, you know, the action of this auction, you know, mm-hmm. the typical movements. You also see other images that then take on a different meaning when you're also reading the text.
Got it.
And then there's other images of like light looking, you know, through sand, things like that.
When does the show happen? Is it on view now?
It's on right now until May 10. Uh-huh. Yes, at the gallery. It's in Cooper Square. And other artists are from, there are So the Latinx project tries to bring Latinx artists, meaning artists who have been living in the U.S. for quite some time, either from South America or from Central America, and who are sort of, working through this cultural identity that is taking shape as you may have had half of your life that you spent in your home country, and then you walk into this new path. And so it's making sense out of all of that, and connecting to even further in time where you saw history many, many, many years ago and where you see that this identity is evolving towards. So the work is quite interesting.
You also make collage work, right?
Yes.
In parallel to this video that you're speaking to, this video installation or the video installations that you make. Can you talk a little bit about that practice of collage making?
Sure. When I am creating when I'm working towards a performance, I explore ideas that I have through in several ways. So when I started doing a series of collages back in 2019, I started to explore anthropomorphic and zoomorphic ideas that I was getting from going through books with pre-Columbian iconography and how, animal limbs were mixed with human figures and connecting to either cosmic elements or were being part of rituals. So my entire life, I've always been fascinated with that iconography. I don't know why. Yeah. So anyhow, these new collages were kind of like, okay, so what would that mean for me today if I imagine these non-human forms? Like, what shape would they take, sort of a thing? And that's something that I sort of wanted to, I guess, play visually to then try to embody in some ways in the performance work.
You make the collages with photographs, right?
Some, yes. Some with hemp magazines, some digitally, and video. So I sort of like, collage things together.
What about the process of the video? Can you talk about how you make it, maybe like the backstory behind that? Do you hire a team or do you have all of the stuff for yourself and you make, record the videos and edit them?
Mm-hmm. I was just a dancer. Yeah. But then I met Claudio, who's my partner and he's a filmmaker.
Oh, cool.
And he convinced me one day to just go out and he would take the camera and I could just like improvise anywhere.
What type of dance do you enjoy?
Contemporary dance, yes. Dance theater, experimental dance. Mm. So we started doing that for a while and I was just having so much fun. And then we weren't taking it too seriously, but this one video really, I couldn't get my mind off of it. So I asked him, so what would it be if we like edit something with this footage that we have? So we sat together and for the first time I experienced, what editing is. Mm-hmm. And it was so overwhelming to me because as a choreographer, you make editing choices all the time, but what you could do was just, there were so many choices.
You can erase or you can
fix
things.
Yeah. So we ended up having a fight, I remember.
Yeah.
over what to do and where to go with stuff. We came back to it eventually. We had a short film. But so that's to tell you that I have learned with Claudio, video and video editing, when things get complex, he takes over. Okay. Because I
thought you were going to say when things get complex, that's not the right answer. Like the answer should always be easy. Like in my mind.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. No, I meant technically when like we have to do something with animation, that's, you know, but I'm there and I'm sort of like, can we do this? Can we try that? Can we do this? Can we try that? Now, like I recently took a touch designer course that was way, way over my head.
What was it?
Touch designer. It's like a visual programming language to do animation. But I'm trying to bring it onto performance. So anyhow, what I'm trying to say is that technically I have the support from Claudio. And when it comes to shoots, most of the time they're very intimate and it's just me and him. You know, if we need to make something a little more complex, then I'll bring a couple more people.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the future, what you hope to see in the future, maybe what you're making or where you're going to be showing more work?
So that's always a question that, I tend to be a bit... I can be very organized and like have like a plan of where I want to be in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. But then at the same time, maybe one thing happens that just takes me into a total different direction.
Yeah.
And I'm very, I don't know if the word is respectful, but there's simply certain life events that, you know, they just take over your life. And so for the future, I see myself continuing wanting to connect my work to the past, and I guess I'm just saying, responding to like your question, I'm thinking of the type of work that I want to be creating.
Please, yeah.
But I guess to just be maybe a little bit looser when it comes to going through, okay, the process of making a video installation or a performance or collaging, sometimes I feel that they can become a little bit, not fragmented is not the word, but I just want to make it more fluid and organic so raw. That...
You want it to be raw, maybe?
Yeah, I just want to continue be making more of it and having, I guess, the work where it's calling me to go, then determine, oh, okay, so then for that, I guess, let me start with collaging. Or for that, I guess it's in a way what I've been doing, but I just sense that I just want to be able to play more so that I don't feel restricted with mediums and I can just do more and maybe bring them even more together.
Okay.
And more like looser ways, explore that space.
Yeah.
Where maybe you can go and it's part installation, part performance, durational, and maybe their performers are for like 6 hours and people can go in and the work will transform eventually. That sort of organicity.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get to go back to Peru?
I have been going, yes, quite a lot recently. Nice. Like, yes. Okay. Yes. So, I had to present the work in 2022 in Peru, and I made a couple trips, research trips. I did a residency that was beautiful in the Peruvian jungle in Iquitos. And I traveled to it's called Pacaya Samiria. It's a national reserve park. And I came back with many sounds. I think it's like we have like 60 files of just pure sounds of the wildlife.
Yeah, what are
during
some
of- the day, uh-huh. During the like at noontime, in the afternoon, let's say between 4 and 6, and at nighttime, and it's like you are in a different world. If the sounds at night, you are in a different jungle than obviously, the sounds during the day.
Is it vibrant? Is it noisy, like chaos, or is it
just... Yes, it's like surround system orchestra of you're just, you feel like, you know, tiny, and and you, it's so it's breathtaking. It's, it takes over you. They're communicating. Yeah, you mean that's the sense that I have.
Yeah.
And they're definitely communicating information.
Mm-hmm.
What type of information? I am unsure, but it's quite magical. So there's this new work that I'm doing that is called In My Center, a Cyborg Seat. It's a performance that mixes the use of technology, and it has to do with where technology is taking us and where it's taking our bodies.
We still have power.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I guess I don't need to.
In Peru, this is called apagón.
The spirits or something?
No, apagón is like when the lights go out.
Oh, okay.
I grew up in the in the 80s with tons of apagones.
So I might keep that in. The power just went off sporadically. And
just when we were talking about how our spirits. Bodies are the spirits.
And technology.
And technology. And I love that. Yes. Boom.
I got to go. Check, please. I'm just kidding. I forgot what we were talking about. Maybe expand on. Can you expand on more of the work that you're making right now and how it's going to impact the future?
Mm-hmm. I'm making this work called In My Center, a Cyborg Seed, and it's partly inspired in ancestral myth, but also in Donna Haraway's The Cyborg, A Manifesto for Cyborgs. And it's playing around what we see ourselves becoming in the future, what we dream that we're becoming, what we're dreading, what we fear that we'll become, around this conversation of AI and how, it's transforming the world. So the piece actually tries to use myth to create an alternative vision of this cyborg. And the alternative vision is partly based on this idea that I have of exploring the identity of a shaman who connects to spirits to bring healing. In some odd ways, I find myself, hopefully not in a new age way, but find myself going towards healing.
Mm-hmm.
So the work at the same time is going to look critically at the use of extractive technology, but at the same time, the audience is going to sort of witness how these cyborgs use ritual and this transformational experiences to integrate along with technology, nature, and human bodies.
Yeah.
So it's a little esoterical, but we started working on some stuff, and the movement is becoming interesting already. One of the exercises that I did that I loved what the dancers started to produce is that we had two dancers, and one of them was exploring extremely hot temperature, and the other one is freezing. But they had to move not at the same time, but really close to each other. And eventually, when you were watching them, it's like they were one body that was cyborgy, like that was non-binary, because it was two extremes happening at the same time. So that's where I'm going with this idea of cyborgness, that it's more of a, you know, we're opening up now with technology to perhaps through many portals or through many realms to just a deeper connection to our place in the world, even with technology.
You have to forgive me, but I don't know what cyborg is.
Bueno, o sea, Cyborg, I'm going by, there were earlier definitions for the cyborg, but I'm going by Donna Haraway's definition, which has to do with, you know, she was empowering this feminist idea of, you know, the cyborg will not know gender anymore. There won't be any like feminine or masculine. The cyborg will, it's quite political and expansive. But the other definition is that it's also the combination, the hybrid between human and machine.
I see.
Yeah. And there are some artists who have actually done experiments in their own bodies, incorporating pieces of technology, and have like registered themselves with IDs and have created sort of mapping systems to you know, to explore themselves as cyborgs, the cyborg identity that, you know, part of their artistic practice.
I see. So it'll be dance movement, right? It's the two energies, the
yeah. So what I'm thinking is that I want to create like a part performance, part installation experience. The audience will be seated on a 180, meaning like a half circle. They will be very close to the performers. The floor hopefully will be covered with like a terracotta sort of powder, but there will be motion tracking. Here we go again. Another apagón. I love this.
Craziness.
Welcome to Miami. And we're back.
It's pretty spooky. Well, I don't know if the government's listening, the cyborgs are listening, and we shouldn't be discussing this information.
Possibly. Oh, right. So I guess I was trying to describe the elements, motion tracking. We're going to work with a 3D animation artist who is going to create avatars out of the dancers so that the audience see the dancers, their body, their fleshes, but they also see their avatars in this virtual environment. And then we're going to use speech to text that they can then manipulate.
Sounds interesting. I look forward to seeing that.
Thank you.
Well, before they shut us down again, I think it's good time to close up the interview. But thanks for spending some time with me. It's been interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I hope you didn't get too spooked.
No, not at all. I love the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much.